Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Chof Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 17 lines from the top of Kuf Chof Gimel. The 17 line mark is about a third of the way down from the top. In the middle of the line, you'll notice a quote from the Mishnah of Es HaKush, the Es HaKarka V'chule. This is, as we say, a quote from the Mishnah, which indicates the use of these kalim, the kushin karker, to stick into food. And kushin karker, Rashi used French words to explain what they were, but they are in the realm of things used by fabric manufacturers. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source, and the topic that we have assigned to this piece of Gemara under our Nosei heading is called Tiltul Min Hatzad. Tiltul Min Hatzad is an expression referring to the movement of something that would ordinarily be considered usur and hence forbidden to move, but if you move it in a non-direct fashion, that would be classified then as Tiltul Min Hatzad. We continue in the Gemara. Pago shetomna betevin, v'charoro shetomna begicholim. Pago is it's the name of a vegetable. It might be something like a radish. The main thing for understanding this Gemara is the shape of the vegetable. It's something that is shaped like a spinning top. This was then preserved. Tomna was hidden underneath some straw. Tevin. Now, tevin is a substance that is used for building material, as a building material and making cement. It's a forbidden substance. It's muksa. The next example is a charor, a cake that is hidden under gicholim, coals. Im megula miktsasa muter letatala. If part of the poga or part of the cake is visible, so it is muter to pull out the paga from the teven or pull out the cake from the coals. V'im lav osur letatala. If the paga or the charor are not exposed, it will be osur to take it. Rabbi Elazar ben Tadoi Omer, Toichvin Bekush Obekarker, Vehein Minaros Mealehen. Rabbi Elazar is lenient and says, why not take, you can take a Kushu Karker, and these are vessels that apparently have a pointy end to them, and just jab it into the Paga, or the Haror that are completely covered by the forbidden substances. And so you are doing your action, your movement action, you're pulling action on the mutter thing, on the teve, on the paga or the harora. And as far as the forbidden substances, they fall off by the way. Let us take a look at Rashi. Rashi is of extreme importance, and though is not lengthy, he nevertheless has a great amount of detail in it. The Rashi Pago, across from here in the Rashi, Te'eno Shelo Bishla Kol Tzorcha. We're here talking, we mentioned something that's radish shaped, but it's specifically not a radish, it is a fig. And a fig also happens to have a spinning top shape when it's a fresh fig, that is, as opposed to a fig that's compressed into a cake. Te'eno shelobish lekol tzorcha, a fig that hasn't, it's not fully ripened. The tonin b'tevin l'sbashel, the practice was to bury it in straw to ripen. The tevin mukze havilatit, tevin itself, straw, is mukze, something one sets aside for tit, for the making of cement. Rashi continues, im megula miksasa, if part of the fig is visible, now, if part of the fig is visible, Rashi says the afilu tiltul min hatzad leka. There isn't even tiltul min hatzad, which would be that the type of offhanded or by the way movement action. You don't have even that. She'ein tzorch lehagbia hateven, because there's no need for the raising of the straw. All that you need to do is pick up the fig from its exposed point. The tevin slips off and falls into place. In other words, the space that this fig occupied, when you slip out the fig, so the straw will just slip down into that where the fig was located. But what we see from the Rashi, and we dashed underline what we feel is the important expression, there's no ein tzorach lahagbia. There's no need for raising the straw. It's not being elevated at all when you're removing the fig, because the fig is partially exposed. The Gemara continues. Omar Rav Nachman, Halocha Kerablozer Ben Tadoi. So Rav Nachman rules like the lenient opinion of Kerablozer Ben Tadoi. Even if the paga or chara are completely covered, there still is a method of extricating them from where they were being preserved. Question: Lameimra desavra Rav Nachman tiltul min atzad lo shmei tiltul. From what Rav Nachman says, that he rules like Rav Elazar ben Tadoi, it seems that this idea of this by the way movement, where you are doing the action, the movement action to the heter substance, and the usher substance falls by the wayside, that's tiltul min atzad, that Rav Nachman seems to allow that. Question though, the Omar Rav Nachman, hi pugla. Now the pugla is what Rashi calls a tznon, and tznon is often translated as a radish. And this is the reference we made before to the radish shaped vegetable, the spinning top shaped vegetable. So Rav Nachman said, hi pugla, mi lemalo lemato shori, if it's it's placed in, let us say it's in the dirt, and it has, it's positioned with its the wide part, as we said, it's shaped like a spinning top, so the wide is on top, and as it narrows or tapers in to a point that is positioned below, then it's mutter to pull it out of the ground. Of course, it's not attached, it's not growing from the ground, it's simply preserved in the ground. Mimato lemala osir. However, if the radish is positioned with the narrow part above and the wide part under surface, it will be osir to pull out the radish. Again, it's not attached. The radish is simply in the dirt for preservation. But what's the problem if it's mimato lemala, if the narrow part of it is positioned upwards? Mata literally is the bottom of it, because the bottom of the radish of the pugla is narrow. So if it's positioned, let's say, upside down with the narrow part up, what happens? Well, there is dirt that accumulates around the wide part that is under the surface. So as you're pulling it out, you are moving the dirt. And Rav Nachman says that is not allowed. So that would seem from this statement of Rav Nachman that tiltul min hatzad would be forbidden. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Mimato lemala osur, Why, if it's narrow, is pointing up, is it usur to remove the pugla? Shemezis ofor, because you're moving the dirt. Lefisha haguma ktsora milamala, v'ruchev hatson hatsnon milamato. The hole in which it is preserved is narrow at the top, as you are approaching the surface of the ground. It's narrow and it's wide at the bottom. V'afagav the tiltel ofor minatzadu, even though your movement of the dirt is this by the way, by the side movement, she'eno ochazo mamish biyodo, you're not holding the dirt in your hand. Nevertheless, Rav Nachman here says that's usur. The Gemara responds, hodar be Rav Nachman me'ahi. Rav Nachman retracts from that. And being that Rav Nachman rules like Rav Elozer ben Tadoi, he would allow, even if the pugla was with narrow end facing upwards, he would allow the removal of it from the dirt, because Rav Nachman is of the opinion that tiltul min hatzad is allowed. The Gemara continues with another quote from the Mishnah: Machat shel yad litol bo esakotz. The Gemara here will be preoccupied with needles that have become ruined or distorted, and their movement on Shabbos. When speaking about a needle, particularly a sewing needle, it has one end of it has what we call the eye of the needle, and in terms of the Gemara, we can refer to as the hole, and the other end, the point. The Gemara, Sholach le Rava Bre the Rabba le Rav Yosef. So Rava sends to Rav Yosef, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, kindly teach us, Rabbeinu, our master, Machat shenital charora uuktza mahu, a needle whose charora, from word chor, the hole, or uktza, the point, has been removed. What is the din? As we go on in the Gemara, we will notice that there is a machlokas, Rav Yosef and Rava, and on the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei heading, we have featured this, where we have written, Machat shenita chor shelo mal betiltul, a needle whose hole has been removed, can you move it? Rav Yosef matir and Rava hoser. And under the Mivne heading, you notice we have a house form around Rav Yosef, and this represents a Kushya, and let's go over this again. Rav Yosef's opinion will be presented with a house around it with the point facing up. That will be followed by a Kushya, and which you see the squiggle underline highlighting that, and Abaye will answer it. Then Rava appears, and Rava has an inverted house. This is to signify that Rava disagrees with Rav Yosef's approach. That will be followed also with a Kushya, and Abaye will answer it. So the Gemara has a very balanced structure to it, in opening with two opposing opinions, each one followed by a question, and then Abaye answering each one of the questions. The question then has been raised concerning a needle whose hole was removed, and Rav Yosef answers Omar Lei. We're back in the Gemara text where the house appears around Omar Lei. That's Rav Yosef responds to Nisua. You can conclude the question or respond, solve the question from the following source: Machat shel yad litol bo es hakoitz. The Mishnah allows the movement of a sewing needle for the removal of a splinter. V'chima ichpas le lakoitz bein nekuva lebein she'ena nekuva. What difference does it make to the thorn whether the needle that's being used for its removal has an eye or doesn't? It should be mutter, and it would be mutter letatel anyway. Esve, an objection. Machad Shinital Charora O Uktza Tahora. This is a Tanaic source that deals, it comes from Maseches Kelim, which deals with vessels and their ability to, or their ability or lack thereof to absorb tumah. This source says that a well, whose charora, whose hole or its eye or uksa, its point has been removed, tahora means it. If it were tumah, it would lose its tumah, and if it's not tumah, it would now would no longer be able to absorb tumah. That would indicate that it doesn't have a kli, a vessel status. And with regard to Shabbos, something that doesn't have a vessel status, something that's not a kli, cannot be moved. So the absence of the eye or the point is a factor, contrary to what Rav Yosef said. Omar Abaye, Tuma Ashabis Koramis, Abaye responds to the question, and he says, you're asking a question from the realm of Tuma onto the realm of Shabbos. Koramis means this is an expression meaning to raise a question or an objection. Tuma kli maisiboinan. The standards that apply to Tuma are different than the standards that apply to Shabbos. Regarding Tuma, kli maisiboinan means that the role that the vessel was to fulfill is extant. As Rashi says, shemaisi shelo kayam. Its role is kayam, is extant. So if the needle's point or eye are removed, so its role as a sewing device is no longer extant. Le'inyan Shabbos, however, midi dechazi bo'inan. With regard to Shabbos, the defining factor in allowing its movement is it an item that's fit for use? The ho'nami chazio lemishkala balkotz. This too, the needle, though its eye or point, well, specifically its eye is removed, is still fit for removing a thorn. Therefore, it's allowed to be, its movement is allowed on Shabbos. Omar Rava. Rava, upon hearing this discussion, says, Man de komoisiv, shaper komoisiv. The one who raised the question from the source in Kalim is raising a good question. Midin tumu lav monahu, from the fact that regarding tuma, it's not considered a vessel, as was illustrated by the fact that it's not mekabel tuma. Le'inyan Shabbos nami lav monahu. Regarding Shabbos, it is also not considered a vessel, and therefore it's usur fitl. Meisvei, we have a Tanaic source that we will use to challenge Rava. Machat a needle bein nekuva bein she'ena nekuva. Mutar l'taltala b'Shabbos. A needle, whether it has its hole or it doesn't have its hole, and the Havamina right now is that its hole was removed. It's allowed to be moved on Shabbos. Volo omru nekuva elo le'inyan tumah bilvad. The necessity of a needle to have its hole is only with regard to tumah. Well, we see very clearly in this source that we do not relate the standard of tumah to the standard of Shabbos. Rava said you must equate the two. The Gemara responds, Tirgama Abaye, Aliva de Rava. Abaye provides an explanation on behalf of Rava. Begolmi Askinon. Golmi is a reference to something that's incomplete or unformed. It's a situation where you have an item being manufactured, being produced, but it hasn't reached its final stage. So the source that makes a distinction between Shabbos and Tumah is a source dealing with a needle in its making. In other words, we're not talking about a needle whose hole, whose eye broke off. Rashi explains the significance of this answer. Begolmi, golmi machatin ha'oimdos linokiv. We're talking about needles that are in their manufacturing stage that are waiting for the eye to be made. The nekuva something whose eye has been made, nigmara malachta, is complete. Vishena nikuva eno nigmara malachta. If its eye was not made, so it's not nigmara malachta, it's not complete. Hilkach linyan tuma hu delo havi kli. Therefore, regarding tuma, since it hasn't been completed yet, it's not classified as a vessel. Avo betiltul sharya dechazi lakut lakotz. But as far as movement of this incomplete needle, that is allowed because it's fit for another purpose, the removal of the thorn. So as we continue in the Gemara, the source that was presented as a kasha on Rava is not a kasha because it's talking about a specific situation of the needle, a needle in its being made. So the let's read the Gemara. Begomi askinon zimnin de mimlich alayu umashvi lehu mana. Sometimes the owner decides to leave it incomplete and use it as is, a needle without the eye. And as we said before, it would be useful for useful as it is for thorn removal. So as far as tuma is concerned, it's classified as a non-kli because it never was completed. But as far as Shabbos is concerned, it's useful as it is. Avol hecha the nital charora o uksa. However, a needle whose hole, whose eye or point broke off, adam zorka leben grutos, a person would throw it out amongst his scrap metal. And in doing so, Rashi says, "Ubotel shame klim." You know that that obliterates the vessel classification that it may have had before, and therefore, even regarding Shabbos, it would not be allowed to be moved. And it's in that sense that Rava's rule still applies, that something that's not considered a kli regarding tuma, it's not considered a kli regarding Shabbos. And by the fact that a person would throw it out, that shows that he is mevatel the shame kli from it, both regarding tuma and Shabbos. We continue with a new activity. On the side, we've written Asubi Yanuka. A newborn, right after birth, sometimes its limbs are not positioned in their proper location. And therefore there's a procedure known as Asuvi Yanuka, which is a manipulation of its limbs to make sure that everything is fit and squared away properly. This adjustment of limbs, as we just said, is called Asuvi Yanuka. And we have a machlokis whether it's if that procedure is allowed to be done on Shabbos. Asubi Yanuka, Rav Nachman Osir, Rav Sheshi Shari. Rav Nachman prohibits it. It appears to be like Misakein. Misakein, as we saw before, is the completion of a vessel. Here we're completing the human body, the human being. And Misakein would probably come under the realm of Makeb Patish, as a prohibited melacha. So Rav Nachman views this as mesakein, and Rav Sheshes allows Asuvi Yanuka. As we go on in the Gemara, Rav Nachman will present his opinion and where he gets it from, and Rav Sheshes at the top of Omid Beis, second line from the top, will do the same. Omar Rav Nachman, Mino Aminola, from where do I know that Asuvi Yanuka should be forbidden? Disnan, the following source, says, Ein Oisin, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Apik Tvizin B'Shabbos, one is not allowed to practice Apik Tvizin, which, pardon the description, is vomiting on Shabbos. Now, obviously an involuntary vomiting is quite okay, but we're talking about an act of induced vomiting, which was a characteristic of the Romans, and this was done simply because of the pleasure that people have from the act of eating. And what would happen is that people, when they reached a point of fullness, they would vomit up their food and to make room in their stomach for more eating. Rashi at the top describes this. Apikfizin, lahaki, shoyse mashkim, umaki, he would drink some type of vomit-inducing beverage, and it would cause him to vomit. Velo lirafua, this was not for healthful purposes. Elo lahorik ismeyav, to clean out his innards. Sheyuchalechov lishtos hayom harbe, so that he can eat and drink a lot today. Can I repair a even though there was no formal prohibition of apikvizin based on its medicinal characteristics, very simply because it wasn't for remedy purposes, usser, it nevertheless is forbidden, mishum de mesaken gavro, because it fixes the man. In other words, it enables him to do something that he wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. So Rav Nachman sees from the prohibition of apikvizin, which has to do with, as Rashi says so importantly, it's an act of misakein gavra. Therefore, asubi yinuka also will be prohibited. We continue in the Gemara with Rav Sheshes. The top line, that is, Rav Sheshes, his response, he allows the Yisuvi Anuka. He says, Hosam lav urche. In the case of the apetvizim, it's something that's unusual. It's not in the normal course of development, if you will. Haha, urche. But in the case of asuvi yinuka, it's normal. It's a part of a person's development. Their birth and their limbs being out of line, the unaligned limbs. And as Rashi says, v'harehu kemi shemachilo mashkeo. It's the aligning of the newborn's limbs is no different than feeding him and giving him to drink. Omar Rav Sheshes, Mino Amino La, from where do I know that Asuvi Yenuka is Mutter, Disnan? The source says, Machat Shel Yad Litol Bo Es Hakoitz. The Mishnah gives allowance for the use of a needle for the removal of a thorn. So what Rav Sheshes is doing is he's paralleling the removal of the thorn, which makes the person feel better. It's an form of tikune gavra, as Rashi says. Tikune gavra without using medicines. So there's no problem of shchikas samamonim, of a gzera otu, grinding of herbs and spices in the making of medicines. Likewise, asuvi yinuka, which is a manipulation, a hand manipulation of the child, is allowed for Rav Nachman. His response to this source is Hosam Pokid, Hachalo Pokid. Pokid, Rashi, Hakoitz Hazeh, Eino Mechuberbo, the thorn that the source features in being allowed to be removed, it is not attached to the person. It's not Mechuber, it's not bound to the person. Ela Mufkod Venosun Sham, it's simply deposited there and sits there under the person's skin. V'hotzazu eino tikun, the removal of something that's not attached to the person cannot be classified as a tikun, as a repair. Hocha lo pokid, in the case of the limbs are not described as deposited in the person. They are part of the person's body. The domi l'malocha shemisajun machnisin l'mokom chibur. And the readjustment, the realignment of the limbs and putting them into their right position is like an act of construction. it's like a, and as Rashi calls it, it looks like a malacha, like a constructive activity, and hence it is to be forbidden. So as we look over the last sugya, we saw a machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes regarding Asuvi Yanuka. The Mishnah. Kona Shelzesen. A kona is a, literally is a reed, or a, in this case it's a reed or a pole, a long stick, that's used in dealing with olives. What do we mean dealing with olives? After olives are harvested, they're then piled, and in the pile, they start developing a certain level of heat, and they soften, and the oil starts to ooze forth from them. The kona is used to stir or flip around the olives, and you would then check to see whether they have reached enough of a heat level of a, we'll call it an oozing or heat level, and it would be the time now to bring it to the olive press. So we're now talking about this kona shelzesim. It goes without saying that Shabbos is not a time that the pressing of olives would be allowed, but we're not talking about the actual pressing, we're talking about the use of this kona shelzesim. Im yesh kesher berosho mekabel tuma. If there is a knot, a kesher is, since we're dealing with a reed, we can talk about a kesher, a knot at its end, at its head. So mekabel tuma, it would then be subject to tuma absorption. Vim lav, if it's a call it a smooth kona, smooth reed, then ein mekabel tuma. It won't be capable of absorbing tuma. Benkach ubenkach nital b'Shabbos. Whether it has the knot or not, it can be moved on Shabbos. The Gemara asks, Amai, even if it has a knot at the end, why is it mekabel tuma? Pshutei kli eitz hu. Upshutei kli eitz einon mekablem tuma. This is an example of a what's called a pshutei kli eitz. That literally, it's a straight or flat piece of wood, and as such, it's not mekabel tuma. Wood is a substance from which vessels are made. You can make cups and bowls and spoons out of wood. If the vessel is something capable of holding a content, so then it's not pshutei kliyetz. It's a rounded, formed cleats that has a receptacle area, a receiving area, making it a receptacle. However, the kona shel zesim is not like that. It's a pshute cleats. And the Gemara goes on to explain, my taima, why is pshute cleats something that's not mekabel tuma? Dumya de sak bo'inan. Sak is, as its name implies, a sack. It's a material made of goat's hair, which the Torah mentions as something that is mekabel tuma. So, together with sack in the Torah, other materials are mentioned, including eitz, including wood. So, we learn from the fact that the eitz is classified together with the sack that, just like the sack is something that is a vessel and is mekabel tuma, and it has a base kibul, it contains things, as its name implies, it's a sack. So too, the other materials mentioned in the pasuk, including wood, in order for them to mekabel tuma, they also have to have a base kibul. So where do you have a base kibul, a receptacle aspect or a receiving area in this kona? The Gemara explains. Tona mishmei de Rav Nechemya, the following was taught in the name of Rav Nechemya, b'shoa shemahapech b'zesim, hofcho v'roe bo. This kona shel zesim, if it has a knot at the end, so when you insert this reed into the pile of olives, So there will be some oil accumulation in the reed, and the oil will amass in the reed because it has the knot at the end of it. However, if it doesn't have a knot, so the reed won't contain anything, and therefore it won't be mekabel tumah. The Gemara that says Hofchu Rabo is explained by Rashi. Hofchu Rabo b'chalal rosho shemishtayer sham al yedei shupokuk b'kesher. He will then notice in that area of the reed, in the hollowed area of the head where the knot is, if oil remains there. That's shemishtayer sham min hashemen. Min hazesim, that is coming from the olives that were piled up. Who bodek bo, and he checks through that imigu laatzor, if they've come to the point where they can be brought to the press. Vizu hilo kabola b'chalal shelo, that is considered its receiving, its kabola in its hollow. V'imlav shein keshebrosh, if there's no knot at the head. Ein hashemen nireis sham, the oil will not be visible there. That nay sheino pokuk, since it's not stuffed, it's not sealed up, doesn't have a knot at the end. Vekulo cholal, and the whole reed is hollow. Hilkoch lav lekabel, who also it's not made a hollow reed is not made for containing substance. Vafei pshute kliates, and therefore it's considered like a flat, smooth kliates. Ubenkach nital b'shabes daha klihu lafuch bozesim. So the konas shozesim, whether or not it has a knot on it, is able to be moved on Shabbos because it has a heter Shabbos use. So as we saw in the previous sugya, even though something might not be classified as a kli regarding kabbalas tuma, nevertheless regarding, or let's put it more simply, even though it's not mekabel tuma, so it would seem to lack a kli aspect, even though it is a kli, it's called a pshute kli, it's nevertheless, it's not mekabel tuma, but that does not serve as an impediment with regard to Shabbos use. The Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol hakelim nitlim chutz min hameser hagodol v'yosei shel machresha. All vessels may be moved on Shabbos, except for the Meser HaGodol. Meser HaGodol is a large saw that's used for cutting beams, logs and beams, and a Yosef Shel Machresha. Machresha is a plow, and a plow, the plow we're describing here, has a blade that is the mainstay of the plow. It's the blade that is drawn along the ground and plows up the dirt. This blade, it is important and very important that its shape is maintained and not bent out of shape. And because if it is, it just becomes unuseful. That applies as well to the saw. A saw must maintain its straight shape. Otherwise, it becomes useless. As a result of that, people set them aside. Rashi says, miyachid lehem mokom, or we see the expression, koveh lehem mokom, and they are, as a result of that, not fit for anything else. Because of the owner's hakpod on them, they are pushed aside and away from other molochas. The Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman, Hai Uchlo de Katsri, Ki Yosei Shamachresha Damyo. Uchlo de Katsri is a vessel used by washmen. Rashi describes what the Uchlo de Katsri is. He has two pshatim. One is it's a washman's vessel. The other is it's used in the smoking of clothing. It's called the Megamrim, or Mugmar, that's used for imposing a pleasant smell to clothing while they are through smoking them. Rashi describes them, the vessel let's look at the Rashi. Uchel katsri klei nechoshes. It's a copper vessel. Hosli kenapo. They call from the kovim. It appears as a sifter. It has full of holes. For who shall kaisim? It's used by washmen. The nosno al habagadim. This uchel dekatsri was placed on clothing. Umezalif bo hamayim. And it was used with it. Water was sprinkled alehem on the clothing. So it was a type of vessel with holes in it, filled with water, and used for sprinkling the water on the clothing. The yesh meforshim, the second shot, shemegamrin mugmar mitachtov. Underneath this holed vessel, spices would be burnt. V'habgodim munochem olav. The clothing placed on top of this vessel with the holes. And the smoke would be absorbed through the holes into the clothing. We continue in the Gemara. Omar Abaye, Harbo de Ushkefi, the Sakino de Ashkapto, the Chatsino de Nagri, Kiyose Shomachresha Domi. He too gives us examples of vessels that are like the Yosei Shemachresha, and that you would not be allowed to use them even for a heter purpose. And this comes out of the concern and the fear of the owner of these items becoming out of shape. What are the items that Abaye mentioned? The Charba Derushkefi is a knife used by leather makers or shoemakers. Rashi uses the term ratzonim. Ratzonim, the word ritsua means a strap, but it has to do with the people who use the knife for cutting leather. The sakino de ashkafto, the Tosfos quotes Rashi and says that it's a knife used by butchers for carving meat. And the second shot that Tosfos gives is it's the knife used for shechita. And the knife used for shechita, as far as laws of shechita, laws of ritual slaughter are concerned, the knife must be completely smooth. It's notch-free. So naturally, if there's such concern with the knife being preserved as notch-free, so the owner of a slaughterer's knife would not want it to be used for anything else. The next item that was mentioned by Abaye was the chatzino denagri. It's a type of hatchet, and nagri are people that are involved with carpentry. So we'll call it a carpenter's hatchet. And as we saw, they are all not to be moved on Shabbos, having the same legal characteristic as the yoseid shel machresha, the blade of the plow. Tonu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source, but before we learn the Gemara, let's glance at the side under our Nosei heading. We've written Gezeras Kalim V'Hatorosam, the original prohibition regarding vessels and their eventual allowance. We will touch on Melachton Leheter, Melachtoi Leiser, vessels who are designed for heter uses, vessels designed for prohibited Shabbos uses, and we'll mention Legufo and Mekomo and Mechamo Letzeil, three categories that we want to apply to each one of these previous topics. The movement of a Kli Shemlachto Le'Isser, as well as a Kli Shemlachto Le'Heter, as we will see in the Gemara, Legufo means for the use of the vessel itself for a Shabbos allowed activity. Mekomo is the movement of the vessel to free up the spot on which the vessel was located. And Mechamo Letzeil is the movement of the vessel out of the sun into the shade so as to protect the vessel from damage. We turn back to the Gemara. Tono Rabbanon. Borishona hoyu omrim shloisha kelim nitlim b'Shabbos. The term Barishon is a historical word, meaning in the days of Nehemiah. Nehemiah was the leader of the Jewish people at the time of the return from the Babylonian exile. He was instrumental in the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. in his time, people were violating Shabbos. They took Shabbos very lightly. In order to counter that, in order to reinstitute the significance of Shabbos, it was ruled that you cannot move anything on Shabbos except for three things. Now, when we say except for three things, Tosfos points out that certain items are obvious. We don't have to talk about them. Things like cups and dishes, those are obviously allowed. So what we're talking about here are three vessels other than the totally obvious. Only three other vessels were allowed to be moved. And they are Miktsoa Shalvela, Vazuam Alistran Shalkadera, Vesakin Tana Sha'al Gabi Shulchan. The Miktsoa Shalvela, Rashi addresses this on the first line under the Gemara text. Miktsoa Ismel Shemechatchin Bodvela. It's a type of knife used for cutting a Dvela. Dvela is a cake of pressed figs. And Rashi goes on to say that the pasuk in Yeshayo, Perek Mendal, pasuk Yigimel that says Yaseu b'maktzuos mitargiminon beizmelehon. So Rashi, in explaining the miktsoa as an ismela, a type of knife, is based on the targum's rendering of the word maktzuos that's found in the pasuk, and the targum, the Aramaic version of that, is the ismel. The next vessel that was allowed at the very outset was the Zuhamo Listeron Shokidero. This is a type of spoon or ladle that's used for the removing of dirt from the top of pots with boiling food in them. There's a type of debris that accumulates on the top of all kinds of foods, stews and soups that are cooked up. The Zuhamo Listeron was used for skimming off the surface of the pot in removing the debris. And the third keli, the third vessel mentioned, is a small knife that people use in the course of their meals for cutting bread and meat. The source goes on, hitiru, v'chazur v'hitiru, v'chazur v'hitiru. There's in the historical development of things, they made an allowance, and then a second, and then a third allowance, ad shamru, until they reached the point that they declared kol hakelim nitlim b'Shabbos, that all vessels can be moved around on Shabbos, chutz min meser hagolov v'yosei shamach resha, with the exception of these items that people deliberately set aside because they don't want them to go out of shape. We've discussed already the meser hagolov, the large saw, and the yosei shamach resha, the blade of a plow. At this point, the Gemara wants to understand what was meant by my hetiru v'chazur v'hetiru v'chazur v'hetiru. In order to explain this, you'll notice we have quite an extensive marking approach, but our hope is that even though at first glance it looks like you can hardly read the words of the Gemara because of the abundance of markings, our hope is that things will be made much clearer and much more easily read by having these markings. On the side, under our Mivneh heading, we have a diamond that's featured. Shnei Deos Mahu Hetiru. And the double underline is placed here to show that that's what will be emphasized in the Gemara when you see the term Hetiru. What were they matir? What do you mean by that? And we will find, in addition to the diamond, which highlights the two opinions that we see, Abaye and later Rava, we will notice a triangle. And when you see the triangle, you'll know that it's Abaye makshe shnei kushios mimikoros al Rava v'Rava mitartzam. We'll see there Abaye raising objections to what Rava's opinion is from sources, and Rava answers. The house marking that you see is Simun Lekli Shemlach Delisser. This is a marking to highlight when the Gemara makes reference to a kli, that a vessel whose design is for prohibited Shabbos activities. As we continue in the Gemara, again, we're trying to explain what does Hetir v'chazer Hetiru mean. Omar Abaye. Hetiru, the first stage of allowance, and Rashi points out that as time went on, so people understood that Shabbos is something to be taken a little more seriously. So as a result of that, the intense original ban could be relaxed, as the ban was to counter an extreme Shabbos ignorance and Shabbos, we'll call it, disparagement. But as that extreme reduced, so too the need to take the preemptive measures, the gezeiro measures, also could be relaxed. So how did things develop? So Abaye says that Hetiru davar shemlachto leheter tzorach gufo. The first stage of relaxing the prohibition was vessels that have a mutter purpose, mlachto leheter, could be moved with tzorach gufo when you're interested in using the item itself. This term of tzorach gufo is used at times, according depending on which opinion, in contrast with the concept of tzorach mekomo, moving it not for itself, but for the spot that the item occupies. So they allowed, the first stage was to allow kelim shemlachton leheter, if you want to use the vessel itself, but not to move it because of the spot that it occupies that you want. V'chazer v'tiru, as the original source said, there was then a second level of relaxation. What did that involve? Dover shemlachto leheter letzorach mekomo. A vessel whose express purpose is for heter activity, if you want to move it because you want the spot that it currently occupies. V'chazer, an example of that is if you want to put down a book on a table, but the spot that is you want to place your book is currently occupied by a kli shemlachto leheter. Since we're going to allow letzorach mekomo, you can then move the vessel in order to make room for the book. The chazer v'tiru, the third stage of heter, is dover shemlachto leiser letzorach gufo in letzorach mekomo lo. If you have a vessel that's express purposes letzorach iser, for its express purposes for a prohibited activity, if you want to use that vessel for itself, let's say you have a scissors, which is an example of a kli shemlachto leiser, and you want to use it for, let's say, cutting an apple. That cutting an apple is an allowed activity on Shabbos. So that would be okay. Letzorach mekomo lo. But to move the kli shemlachto leiser because you want to free up the spot that it occupies, that we will not allow. Vadayin biyodo achasin b'shte yodov lo. And even with the heter of moving the kli shemlachto leiser letzorach gufo, that's only if it's a small type vessel that you can move with one hand. But if it's large, that you would need two hands to move it, it would be osur. Ad she'omru kol hakelim l'mishal. This is the fourth stage. Until they, in that early historical point, they said all vessels can be moved on Shabbos. What do we mean by that? That all things can be moved? What it means, what it comes to include, or what it comes to allow that was previously forbidden is v'afilu b'shtei yodayim. Even if it's a large kli shemlachto liser that you would need to use both hands to move it, that now would be allowed. But what we're saying then is a kli shemlachto leiser, a large one that you want to use letzorach gufo, it can now be moved. The Gemara continues. Omar Lei Rava. Rava challenges Abaye and it says, Michti. Let's look into this. Hetiru kotani. At the first stage, we saw the term hitiru. They made an allowance. Ma li letzorach gufo, ma li letzorach mekomo. As far as rova is concerned, there is no basis of making a distinction between letzorach gufo and letzorach mekomo. Both of them are necessary for the owner or for the individual. And if you're matir letzorach gufo, you'll also they would have also been matir tzorach mekomo. Therefore, elo omar rova. He goes over his approach, and again, the same marking scheme to show what happened at each stage of the gezeirah relaxation. So Rava says, "Hitiru dover shemlachto leheter bein lesorach gufo bein lesorach makomo." They allowed heter vessels, whether lesorach gufo lesorach makomo, v'chazur hitiru mechamo letzel. At the second stage, they allowed the movement of a kli shemlachto leheter from the sun, from out of the sun into the shade, to preserve the vessel. The chazru v'tiru davar shemlachto le'iser letzorach gufo letzorach mekomo in mechamo letzel lo. And at this third stage of heter, they allowed a kli shemlachto le'iser to be moved, whether it's letzorach gufo or even letzorach mekomo, but not from out of the sun into the shade. However, even at this stage, when we are allowing the kli shemlachto leiser, even letzorach mekomo, it must be a small vessel, small enough that one person will be sufficient to move it. But if it's so large that you would need two people, that is not yet allowed. Ad shomru kol hakilim nitlim b'shabbos, until we get to the fourth stage, afilu b'shnei b'nei adam, even if it requires two people to move this kli shemlachto le iser, it will now be allowed. Esfei Abaye. Now, as we mentioned earlier, the triangles are Abaye raising questions on Rava, and Rava responds. So the question, Esfei Abaye. Maducha. Now, maducha is an example of a kli shemlachto le'isur. It's a grinder. Im yesh bo shum metalten oso. If there is garlic in the grinder, so then you can move it. V'im lav ein metalten oso. And if there's no garlic, so you are not allowed to move it. What do we see from this? Well, we have an example of a kli shemalachto le'iser. If there's no garlic, you can't move it. Well, that's a kasha on what we got finished saying, that a kli shemalachto le'iser, you are allowed to move letzorach gufo or letzorach mekomo. The Gemara answers, hocha b'mayaskinon mechama letzel. The issue concerning the maducha, when we say that if there's no garlic, you can't move it, because your interest in the movement was simply to move it out of the sun. And we saw that if it's an issue of mechama letzel, then a kli shemlachto leiser cannot be moved. Esfei, v'shavin shem kotzav alav basar she'osur letavlo. We had seen this source earlier. This is referring to the machlokis beishameis hill regarding the use of an ali, a chopping board, on Yom Tov. There is agreement that if you finished chopping the meat for Yom Tov, then even Beis Hillel agrees that it's osur letaltalo. Well, this is a kli shemalachto leiser. It's used in grinding, and we see that it's forbidden to move it. The Gemara, and that would be counter to what we described before. Well, certainly that which we saw in Rova, that kli shemalachto le'iser, you're allowed to move it, letzorach gufo or letzorach mekomo. From here it seems that it's usur. The Gemara responds, hocho nami, this case too, the case of the ali, in addition to the case of the maducha, mechama letzel, all that is being prohibited is the movement of it from the sun into the shade. The Gemara now makes reference to what we cited from Rashi when we saw the Gemara earlier toward the toward the end of the narrow lines at the beginning of the Tanaic source that was there, where we've mentioned Borishona. What was that Borishona? And here the Gemara explains what we said already. Omar Rebbe Hanina, Bimei Nechemya ben Chachaya Nishneis Mishnah Zu. It was in the time, in the days of Nechemya ben Chachaya, was, as we said, the leader of the Jewish people at the time of the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash at the end of Golos Bavel. He says that this Mishnah, which said that there's a heter for three vessels, we saw the Tanaic source, that is, that said, Borishana Imram Shosha Kelim Nitlin. So Rabbi Chanina points out that source was taught at the time of Nechemya. Dichtiv. And here the Gemara gives the posuk background. Bayomim Ohemo, Roisi Biuda Dorchim Gitos, Ba Shabos, Mavino Aremos. The Nechemya describes, in Sefer Nechemya it is described that in those days I saw in the Yehuda region them Dorchim Gitos, they were basically preparing wine. They were trampling wine or squeezing wine on Shabbos, which is totally forbidden. And yet they were violating Shabbos in those days. Hence the need for this extreme action to counter their extreme ignorance. And that was designed to shake up the people and look into the laws of Shabbos a little bit more. And that's what happened. Omar Rebbe Elazar. He mentions four items that are really four terms that refer to Mishnayos: Konin, Umaklos, Glustura, Umaducha. Kulon, Kedem, Hatoras, Kelim, Nishnu. Each one of these Tanaic sources was taught these are very old Mishnayos. These are Mishnayos that date back to the period that was referred to in the time of Nechemya before the people gained any respect for Shabbos. So as a result of this very early time period, we'll understand these four Mishnayos. Before we go further in the Gemara, a structural note is very much in order. First of all, we notice a long point, and that's illustrated by the encircled nun to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you'll see that this point continues down the first several lines of Kuf Chof Dalet. On the side, under our No Se heading, we've written Rebbe Elazar features four Mishnayos. Now, you can see we have a bow tie around the word Mishnayos, and that is, introduces what we'll see in the Gemara. Be'inyan Iser Tiltul Kelim Shenishnu Kedem Atoras Kelim. These Mishnayos are of an early historical nature. They teach us regarding the prohibition of moving vessels before the allowance was made. That's Rebbe Elazar's approach. Rabba on Kuf Chof Dalid Omed Aleph Cholek. He disagrees. And in the Mivneh, the structural note, you'll notice we have a diamond. Actually, we have a bow tie, two kinds of bow ties. The difference being the colored in tips where they're located. So the diamond, the bow ties with the tips above colored represents Rebbe Elazar's opinion. And later on, we'll see how they are dealt with by Rabba. So we now continue in the Gemara. The purpose of the Gemara is to feature the sources that Rebbe Elazar just referenced. Konin Desnan. Konin is a reference to poles or reeds that were, we'll just say they were thin poles that were present in the Lechem Aponim. The Lechem Aponim were two stacks of breads that were kept from week to week in the Beis HaMikdash. It says regarding that, Lo Sidur HaKonin V'lo Netilos Andoiches HaShavas. Between each bread, the breads were stacked six, one on top of the other. Between each bread, thin poles were inserted, and they're called konim, to allow for wind flow between each bread so that they should not develop mold. They shouldn't become mi'upash. Rashi points out very interestingly that even though the lechem aponim were the subject of a miracle, and so far as they remained fresh from one week to the next, you had bread that was a week old that was still warm and fresh, we nevertheless ain somchen al hanis. We don't rely on miracles, so that as we have to do something, we have to take some action to prevent mold, and that was accomplished by using the konim. Now, the halacha, as far as this mishnah is concerned, is that the konim were removed from between the loaves on Friday, and the breads which remained until Shabbos on the table in the shulchan there in the Beis Hamikdash, they remained thusly without the poles that had been between the loaves for the previous 6 days. So the setting up of the poles for the new loaves that are brought in on Shabbos, that was the changing of the breads, took place on Shabbos. So the setting up of the konim, nor the removal of the konim, overrules Shabbos, so that you don't deal with the konim on Shabbos. And what Rabbi Elazar is saying, even though the konim themselves were not malachto le'isor, nevertheless you weren't allowed to move them. This is because we were dealing this early time period when people disparaged or were very ignorant of Shabbos. So as to convey the seriousness of the Shabbos, we ushered the movement of even things like the konim. Maklos, the stan, the case of the sticks, maklos or sticks. The stan, the Tanaic source, is in the context of the Korban Pesach. It says as follows: Maklos dakin chalokim hoyu shom. They had some thin, smooth sticks. Umanicho al ksefo the al kosef chavero. The person would take two sticks, place one on one shoulder and the other end lying on his friend's shoulder, and likewise with the second stick placed across their second shoulders. Vitole umafshit, and the Korban Pesach was then suspended between the two poles, and it was skinned. Omar, now Rabbi Lazar, Omar, Rabbi Lazar Omer, Arbosu Shechalios b'Shabbos. If the 14th of Nisan, which is the time for slaughtering and skinning the Korban Pesach, fell out on a Shabbos, they wouldn't use the maklos, they wouldn't use the sticks to suspend the Korban Pesach. Rather, meniach, we continue at the top of Kuf Chof Dalet Amud Aleph, Yodo al Kosef Chavero, V'yad Chavero al Ksefo. Each one would extend one arm and place it on his friend's shoulder, with his friend facing him, and his friend would place his arm on the first one's shoulder, and that way the toilu mafshid, and they would tie the suspend the korban pesach to their extended arms, and thereby proceed with the skinning. So what did we just see? That on Shabbos, they're not allowed to use the maklos. And it should be obvious, and we've learned this in the past, that the processing of the Korban Pesach and its skinning is something that is allowed to be done on Shabbos. So the maklos here represented something that is associated with heter, with allowed, and yet they weren't allowed to use them. And why not? Why couldn't they use that which is strictly permitted? The answer is because it was at that early time period when people were Mizalzel in Shabbos. Glustera, disnan, the case of the glustera is explained in the following. Neger, sheyesh, berosho, glustera. A neger is a door bolt. It's used for locking doors. You would insert this bolt into a hole in the floor or into the hole of the side post, and it would bolt the door shut. So the neger that has yesh barosho glustera. A glustera is a, let's say, ball-shaped end to the neger. And the glustera is something that could be used as a crushing device as well. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, shoimto min pesach zeh v'toyla pesach zeh. v'tov b'chaveru b'shabbos. Rashi explains Shomta mipesach zeh v'tov b'chaveru, the second line from the top. V'afagav ditzorach l'gufo litloso b'chaveru, even though he needs the neger for itself to suspend it or attach it to another door to work to serve as a door bolt. That's litloso b'chaveru ulenoalabo. Nevertheless, Shomto Agabi Grero, all you can do, if you want to move it from one door to the next, you can do it through Grero, through dragging it. Aval tiltul gomor lo. But to actually move it in a direct movement fashion, that would not be allowed. Aval pishim lachto leheter. Even though it's designed for a heter purpose, for locking a door. Lo shori le litzorach gufa. He did not allow direct movement of it, even though you need it for itself. And as we explained already, that's because, why the restriction? Because this is at the time of the original Gzeirah made in the time of Nehemiah. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Hare hu kechol hakelim umetatel b'chotzer. Rabbi Tarfon is more lenient and says it's like any other vessel that can be moved around in a courtyard. Maducha hoda moran. The case of the maducha was the grinder with the garlic. And as we saw there, that if it doesn't have the garlic, so you would not be allowed to move it. And as far as the Gemara here, the prohibition of moving it is simply because it is this source is from the the reference in the source to the maducha is an early Mishnah. It was during that time that they needed to impose these extreme rulings. At this point, Rabbah challenges the approach taken by Rabbi Elazar in presenting these four Mishnayos. Omar Rabbah mimai. From where do you know this? Dilma li olam emaloch li achar hatoras kelim nishnu. I can tell you that these four vessels that we featured in the bow ties and their sources were taught after an allowance was made for vessels. And as far as each one of the vessels featured, why are they prohibited if they are Mishnayos from a more recent time period when things were more allowed? Konim taimomai. So he explains the kunim, the poles that were inserted between the loaves of the lechem aponim. What was their original purpose? Mishum apushi was to prevent mold from developing. Behai purta lo meapish, from in this very short amount of time, namely from Friday till Shabbos, mold won't develop. So there was no need for the poles whatsoever. Therefore, remove them from Erev Shabbos. Have the breads placed directly on each one below it, and you don't have to worry about mold developing in such a short amount of time. So that even though we're talking about a heter time period, if something is totally unnecessary, so don't bother with it. Therefore, remove the poles Erev Shabbos, being that they have no purpose from Erev Shabbos till Shabbos, so don't bother with them at all on Shabbos. Maklois, as far as the issue with the sticks that supported the Korban Pesach while it was being skinned, why not use it on Shabbos? Use the sticks. Efshek Rebbe Elazar, because you have another approach that is what's called totally mutter approach, the extending of the arms, each person on his friend's shoulder. And as such, since we have a totally heter way of doing things, so forget the maklos, the sticks. The next example, glustera, this was the door bolt with the wide end to it. The source spoke about just dragging it from one doorway to the next. The problem behind the glustera is that we were dealing with a doorway that opened into a chotzer where no eruv was made. So when you have a chotzer and no eruv was made, you are not allowed to carry items from the house into the courtyard, nor from the courtyard into a house. The house is a strictly private domain, and a courtyard without an eruv is considered rabbinically a semi-public domain, and therefore, without an eruv, without a joining mechanism, which we refer to by the term eruv, one is not allowed to carry from house to courtyard. Rabbi Yeshua, who prohibited the movement of the neger, he holds that Rabbi Yeshua sovar toch apesach lifnim domi. The doorway, that's toch apesach, means inside the door. It means the doorway, which is the current location of the door bolt, has the status, the doorway has the status of being inside the house. And if you wanted to move the neger, the door bolt, from this doorway to another door in the courtyard, the kometaltel mona debotem b'chotzer, it would end up being that you're carrying a house vessel, because since the tocha pesach, the entrance way, is considered like inside the house, moving it from the doorway to another door, you would be in effect carrying an indoor vessel into the courtyard. And that is not allowed because you have a courtyard without an eruv. Rabbi Tarfon, that allowed the movement, is Savar Toch HaPesach Kilechutz Domi. The entranceway is of a chotzer status, as a courtyard status. Umonu de chotzer b'chotzer kometatel. Then there's no problem, even if there's no eruv, there's no problem of moving things around within the chotzer. So moving it from one doorway to another doorway, the neger remains the whole time in the chotzer, and therefore there would be no problem. Maducha, the grinder prohibition, is Rebbe Nechemyahi. That is because the Mishnah there is authored by Rebbe Nechemyah, who, even after the Gzeras Kalim has been lightened, he says that a kli is not allowed to be moved unless you're moving it for what it was designed for, and a maducha was designed for grinding, and that's prohibited on Shabbos, and to move it for any other purpose would not be allowed. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.